First 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang put the idea of universal income on many people's radar last year, a policy that would essentially pay every American adult $1,000 per month. Now in 2021, we have something similar but different. Several cities in the U.S. are set to pilot a guaranteed income program, something that would grant participating families and individuals a monthly payment, no strings attached, as part of a project called Mayors for Guaranteed Income. Wausau is one of the cities currently being offered a grant to pilot that program, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think something like guaranteed income is a good idea? Would you prefer to see guaranteed or universal income? We'll talk about the difference in just a bit, or neither. What concerns do you have about a program like this? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Katie Rosenberg is the mayor of Wausau. Mayor Rosenberg, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show.
Well, I know it's not a done deal yet, but tell us a little bit about this grant and how the city got on the radar for it.
Yeah, sure. So as all things start, I was checking some things out on Twitter, and I saw an article about this, and I was really intrigued. And so I started talking to the organizers for Mayors for a Guaranteed Income, and they started telling me about this amazing program. And obviously, I want this for Wausau, but paying for it's tough. So they told me all about it, and there's a grant available. So brought it to our finance committee this week, and they unanimously approved. So we're looking to talk about this at City Council next month.
What would this do if the council signs on?
Right. So that's when the work begins. They would be authorizing me to work with city staff and Mayors for Guaranteed Income and some outside agencies here that really deal with these populations to come up with criteria to find the families and individuals that would qualify for this program. So the thing that's different about guaranteed income versus universal basic income is just that it's not universal. It's very targeted and strategic. So we would find out, you know, who would benefit the most, how can we make sure they get into this program, and then we would plan for that and have them apply, and then for the next year or year and a half, depending on how long we run this program, these individuals would get $500 a month, and they would be working with the researchers at University of Pennsylvania to track what they're buying, see what the outcomes are, you know, quality of life metrics and things like that.
What would you be hoping that this program would accomplish?
I want to help people. I mean, that's my ultimate goal. I want to help people. So I think that's the number one goal, is I think it will help folks in Wausau. But the other thing is, you know, this is part of a larger body of science that will lead to policy decisions in Washington, D.C. So I'd be really excited to see what becomes of this and how we can help future policymaking.
Janine on the Ideas Network Facebook page writes, $500 per month, that doesn't even cover rent for most families. Can you talk about that amount?
Right. So, you know, it's hard to tell what the right amount is for people, but the idea isn't that it would replace your job. Maybe it could replace one of your jobs. You know, we know a lot of people who are in these ALIS households, the asset limited income restrained, but they're still working. So this will help supplement their incomes so that maybe they won't have to work three jobs. Maybe they won't have to go to that title loan company and get taken advantage of in that way. Maybe they'll be able to stay home with their kids and work on homework instead of going to another job. So I think that's what we're looking at more as a supplement. It's not a replacement for work.
And so far, what's been the response been from Wausau residents to this idea maybe being on the horizon?
Sure. Confusion, excitement, trepidation. You know, there's some people that are just philosophically opposed to giving people money. So we're dealing with some of that discussion. But I think overall, from the organizations that work with these populations that are the working poor, they're really excited about the opportunity to help more people.
Mayor Rosenberg, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Katie Rosenberg, mayor of Wausau, talking about a grant that would help pilot a project for guaranteed income for some families in the community. Well, Amy Castro Baker joins us now. She's an assistant professor at the University of Pennsylvania in the School of Social Policy. She's the co-director for the Center for Guaranteed Income. Amy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us, spell out a little more the difference between universal income, which was talked about, as I mentioned, last year during the presidential campaign some, and this idea of guaranteed income.
Yeah, so there's a lot of confusion. So, you know, first I'll say kind of that these types of experiments and pilots and programs all fit within this larger body of work that we call cash transfer, you know, research or cash transfer experiments, basically experimenting to figure out, you know, what happens when you give people money, no strings attached. So kind of within that domain, you have three different types of programs. So first is universal basic income, and that, you know, gained a lot of traction as, you know, Andrew Yang was running for president. The idea of universal basic income is exactly what it sounds like. It's a UBI. It's universal, meaning the amount of money would be given to every single person in a set county, state, you know, district, area, that kind of thing. And then there's guaranteed income, which is what we're working on with Mayors for Guaranteed Income. And that is a fixed amount of money that you can rely upon every month that basically covers, you know, the bare minimum sort of basic needs. And then, of course, there's basic income, which is enough to cover all basic needs per month. And that's not exactly what we're experimenting with here.
A key point for all of these, though, you use the phrase no strings attached, because a lot of the ways we do yeah. various kinds of economic relief. Here's some food stamps or food assistance, we call it. Now you can buy food, not that food, this list of food. And here's maybe housing assistance. Here's exactly. healthcare assistance, targeted stuff. Why this significant push toward or this effort to try at least no strings attached?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's a really valid one. It's one that we actually get from, you know, from local people all the time when new pilots are launching, is saying, you know, why do we need this? We already have food stamps, we already have housing vouchers, we already have nonprofits. What is it about cash? You know, but I think the average American household is now experiencing what those of us who might be working poor have been experiencing for decades, which is that the needs in families are dynamic. So while your need might be, you know, food one month, the next month it might be rent. The next month after that, it might be that someone has an unexpected medical expense. And so the idea is, you know, people's needs are dynamic. They change by the season. They change sometimes by the week. And cash is dynamic. And it really kind of rests on this idea that you need to have an intervention that's flexible enough to meet the dynamic risk that people experience in the economy.
I think part of the reason we do things like food aid in particular, things like that, is the concern that people receiving this money are going to spend it unwisely or frivolously, or even, you know, with alcohol and drugs in ways that are harmful to themselves. You've been studying this. What happens when people get this no strings attached money, people living, you know, precarious economic existences? What do you see happen?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? You know, what we've seen happen in Stockton, which is where we've been piloting this, you know, first and foremost in Stockton, California, about an hour and a half east of the Bay Area, is that the majority of expenses went towards food. You know, the idea behind guaranteed income is really that people are the experts on their own lives. And we know from, you know, a large body of social science and behavioral economics that it's the people who live at the margins who actually budget best, not the rich, because they know to the day and the week when they're money is going to run out. And we've really seen this borne out in the seed experiment in Stockton, where folks have been using the money to patch those holes in the market where they just can't get by. And then also, of course, starting to contribute towards savings after they're able to meet their basic needs. But, you know, hands down, the largest expenditure that we see is on food. And, you know, interestingly, leading into the pandemic last year, we saw the spending patterns shift a little bit in terms of how people were using the money. And it turns out that just that little bit of extra cash of just $500 a month, which for some of us is the size of a car payment, people were able to actually shelter in place and comply with public health guidelines in a way that they wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
We heard from Joel on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who writes, "This only encourages inertia by the citizen receiving this free money, hardly the way to foster ambition and self-improvement." So, and this is a common concern, I think, the idea that this is a disincentive for someone to mm-hmm. go out and get a better job or improve their lives in some way.
Yeah, I mean, this is really an open research question in terms of the amount of money that should be given into a guaranteed income, you know, experiment or policy if it were ever to be rolled out programmatically on a policy level. But, you know, the data doesn't show that it impacts employment. I mean, the issue here, you know, we're not really powered to detect questions about that within the Stockton experiment, but it's sort of plain and kind of self-evident. No one can live on $500 a month. Right. And so the idea behind giving people $500 a month, why that amount of money is typically chosen in these experiments, is because 40% of Americans cannot afford a $400 emergency. And so they're working more and making less. And so people are working extensive hours at jobs that don't have benefits. And it actually shows up as poor public health indicators, poor child well-being outcomes, different things like that within the family. And so the idea is, if we can really smooth that income volatility, how does it then free people up to maybe choose a healthier job, a better job, which you really can't do if you're working right on the margins and you're knitting together two and three, you know, jobs through Uber, Postmates, you know, maybe working at a restaurant. That patchwork actually destabilizes you over time. It doesn't incentivize you to work more. It actually impacts your health and impacts your finances.
We're talking to Amy Castro-Baker, assistant professor at the University of Pennsylvania in the School of Social Policy. She's co-director there for the Center for Guaranteed Income. We're talking about this idea of guaranteed income, often $500 a month. It is being piloted, rolling out in different cities around the country, including possibly soon Wausau. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this idea of guaranteed income? In this case, it's grant funded. Would you like to see it as public policy at the city, state, or national level? What concerns do you have about the idea? What questions do you have about it? Call it now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Amy Castro-Baker, assistant professor at the University of Pennsylvania, co-director for the Center for Guaranteed Income. Cities around the country are looking at using grants for a pilot project for a guaranteed income. Wausau is on that list. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of that idea for selected people in communities with particular income levels? Some new strings attached money. $500 a month is what's in the pilot program right now. Do you like the idea? Do you have concerns? Do you have questions? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go to a caller now. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to kind of give a little perspective, or at least my thoughts. So there's a book that was written earlier this, or I guess in 2020, and it's called The Price of Tomorrow by Jeff Booth. And kind of the concept is that really UBI and all these kind of things about working more hours for less pay, things like that, it's all basically we live in a deflationary society in the sense that we get deflation in goods and services, like, you know, Blockbuster was replaced by Netflix, things like that. And we end up kind of in this society that's deflationary, but the whole premise of the Federal Reserve's impact is to create inflation. So I guess I'm just kind of curious about the guest's perspective on inflation versus deflation in our society.
John, thanks a lot for the call. You're doing this kind of on a micro scale so far, Amy, and that seems like a real macro question. But do you have thoughts on widespread use of either universal income or guaranteed income, whether people are worried about the possible inflationary aspects of that?
Yeah, you know, first of all, it's a great question, John. Thank you so much for raising it. You know, that's not the type of work that I do within this, but what I would do is really point the caller towards the work of my colleague, Dr. Ioana Marinescu. She's a labor economist who studies UBI, and that her modeling really gets at some of those bigger questions. But I think the fact that he's asking it really raises something which is on people's mind, which is, what would this actually do to the economy? If we were actually going to give everybody beneath a particular threshold a guaranteed income, what would that actually do to the price of goods? What would it do to the market? What would it do to employment? And these are key open questions that we're not quite, you know, positioned to answer yet. But, you know, one of the things that I often ask is what happens if we don't? Right? Because we've been prioritizing, you know, profits at the top for an awfully long time. And we see what's happening to the average working household. You know, I mean, most Americans at this point who are under the age of 35 are members of the first generation in U.S. history that are projected to do worse off financially than their parents. And they are working more, right? So there's something broken about the way that we're approaching the economy and the way that we're approaching just simply getting by. And yet we keep going back and trying to use the same economic tools and interventions that we've been using for decades, when in reality, you know, as you know, that particular book I'm familiar with, it points out, our world has changed. And it's about time that we change our economic policy and our social interventions to keep up with that.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to John now in Boaz. John, hi.
Hi. I'm aware of the National Public Radio broadcasting a similar economic help for the poor recently, and I'm wondering which country was that, and are you following along some of the same principles?
John, thanks for the call. Have you seen other countries pilot to similar programs, Amy?
You know, there's been a lot of different programs that have sort of been piloted, mostly in sort of the community development space or development economics. The place that I would point to that has sort of the most robust infrastructure and literature is the Give Directly project, which has been working around the globe for many years, building up a knowledge base around this. We haven't had anything that's strictly guaranteed income yet. A lot of folks will hear people point towards the Finland experiment, but that was really more about unemployment than it was about guaranteed income. So that was slightly different. But yeah, I mean, it's really an open question. There's a lot of pilots taking place around the globe. I think the one that's the most exciting is one that's taking place down in Brazil with some of my colleagues from the Jain Family Institute. And what they're doing there is they're actually going to be able to detect labor market effects on an entire city. So there's definitely a movement globally to sort of say, you know, it's time that we try to innovate a little bit and try to stop solving our problems with the exact same set of tools.
Thanks for that call. We are talking to Amy Castro-Baker from the University of Pennsylvania, co-director there of the Center for Guaranteed Income. Cities around the country piloting this idea with grants, so with at least selected families getting some guaranteed income, $500 a month under the grant program when they accept it. Let's go back to your calls now. Let's bring on Debbie in Sheboygan. Debbie, hi.
Hi. I just had one question. Who would pay for this program, and could you call it socialism?
Debbie, thanks for the call. So right now, these are grants not funded by the government, Amy. The idea, though, is that you're piloting them. Who would pay for them if it became more widespread?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Debbie. It's a great one. Honestly, you know, we're not sure yet. I mean, the one thing I will say is that these early pilots and experiments have been funded almost entirely by philanthropic dollars. So in Stockton, we are using absolutely no tax dollars to fund that work. Some other cities, as they have rolled out, have been using things like CARES Act dollars to, you know, experiment a little bit and figure out how this program would need to work before you scaled it up. But, you know, I think the two most promising avenues for funding it, if you were to fund it at the federal level. And to be clear, we are many years out from that. We really have a lot of empirical work to do before we actually design policy around this. And this is what's so exciting about Wausau taking this on, is that we don't have a lot of cities in the Midwest, and we need to learn more about areas like that when we think about rolling out a policy. But the two kind of most likely suspects for actually funding it would be taxing carbon or taxing data. And when I say taxing data, I don't mean taxing individuals. I mean taxing social media companies, you know, large conglomerates who are making profits off of us by all the cookies that we drop when we go around the internet. So we use those services ostensibly for free, but companies yield enormous profits off of selling that data to advertisers.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Karen now in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Karen?
Hi. I'm just wondering, I mean, have you thought about using this money in a different way for skills training, for, you know, more education about continuing to have children when there's no parent, no father around? You know what I mean? You know what happens when we give money to drug addicts, to alcoholics, and I'm just wondering if you have thought about these types of things to use this money in a more educational way.
Karen, thanks for the call. So use the money for job education and I guess parent training education, Amy.
Yeah, no, thanks for that question, Karen. I think it's a good one. And I think that it's brave to name the thing that people want to ask, but sometimes are afraid to, right? You know, the answer to this, you know, really for me comes out of my experience first and foremost as a social worker. So I'm, you know, licensed or formerly licensed social worker who practiced for many years before becoming a researcher. And so I know both from social work experience and then also from a large body of data that there is a real, that while coaching programs and training programs and education pipeline policies are fantastic, when we know how well that they work, there's a real ceiling, right? So I can educate somebody on how to get a job. I can educate somebody on how to manage money, but if they don't actually have money, they can't manage it, right? And so part of the problem is that we've been really stuck for a really long time in anti-poverty work, trying to teach people and coach them on how to manage their money and how to get by. But the reality is you can't budget what you don't have. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is that, you know, we also know from, I think I said this a few minutes ago, that the people who live at or below the poverty line tend to be best at budgeting money. They know to the day, to the week, to the hour sometimes when their money's going to run out. And they tend to be really, really savvy about how it is that they are going to patch those holes. So, but we haven't tested this yet. So we know a lot about financial coaching. We know a lot about parenting programs. We know a lot about education. We know very, very little about cash.
Thanks for that call. And Amy, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Great questions.
We've been talking to Amy Castro-Baker, an assistant professor at the University of Pennsylvania in the School of Social Policy. She's co-director there for the Center for Guaranteed Income. We also heard earlier from Mayor Katie Rosenberg of Wausau earlier in the conversation. They joined us to talk about guaranteed income programs. Wausau has a grant, if they end up accepting it, that would fund $500 a month for selected families in Wausau.